This is Cliffo and Gabby's catch up.
Hello and welcome to the Cliffo and Gabby summer series where we reminisce.
Sounds like a cricket series.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. We're reminiscing though on what was 2021 because there were some really great parts.
We've got producer Brooke here as well. Welcome,
hello,
producer Brooke. So we're all three of us picking our favourite bits
from
to replay
year, yeah,
for the summer series.
I'm first for this one. So my favourite bit was Aqua.
The band.
Obviously.
Not the colour.
My favourite colour is not Aqua. No, we had Aqua on as a memory Monday and all of the members joined us on Zoom and it was so much fun.
My favourite bit in today's pod is you opening up about trying for a baby. It was really vulnerable, beautiful, hand on heart. Not hand on heart. What do you put on your sleeve?
Heart on sleeve.
Heart on sleeve stuff. You can tell we're on summer holidays, can't you?
Listen to the actual bit. It's way better.
It's heaps better, Brooke.
And mine was one of our never going to get ones. It was Edith Conn who spoke to, she actually met Princess Diana. I think because my mum's always been so obsessed, this chat was just so amazing for me.
Strap on in, guys. The summer sessions, we are reminiscing together. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the world's only Danish-Norwegian Europop music group. They had a stack of hits in the 90s. But Aqua are better known for this earworm. Barbie, let's go party. Make room on Zoom for Aqua, because the whole band join Cliffo and Gabby right now.
Aqua, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to have you guys on.
So excited to be with you guys as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's 1 o'clock. I don't know where you guys are.
It's 1 o'clock somewhere in the world.
That's right.
Always.
It's so funny. You guys are drinking wines. We're drinking coffees. But hey, we've all got nice lubricated throats. That's great. What I find really interesting, because you guys released a few singles and then Barbie Girl came out and you exploded. Mm. We've interviewed a lot of musicians over the years and one of the common themes we often hear is we didn't know our biggest hit was going to be a hit. At the time, we had no idea. It was kind of the opposite for you guys. While you were working on Barbie Girl, you knew you had the hit that was just going to, you know, shoot you off into outer space pretty much as a band.
Yeah, you can kind of have that feeling when you're working with something, but you can't expect it or predict that it's going to be a huge, massive worldwide hit. But sometimes you just have a feeling that, you know, you have something good in your hands and it's going to do well.
I mean, we had a good idea that it was a really strong pop song. And we actually gave it a few different names just in case somebody would run off with our brilliant idea. But as Lena said, it took us by a huge surprise.
It was another thing is that Denmark is such a small country that I mean, really, we had nobody out except for us really had that much success. So we knew it was a hit, but we didn't know if it was just going to be a hit in Denmark and Norway, Sweden, kind of like which is normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys went on to have, you know, Dr. Jones' number one hit to follow up Barbie Girl, Turn Back Time, Candyman, like the list goes on. But because Barbie Girl was such a worldwide hit, was there a concern that it would be a one-hit wonder?
There was a lot of talk about that at one point, and we got that question loads of times. But I can, with a big smile on my face, say today that, hey, guys, it was not a one-hit wonder because we were still on the radio in Australia. 25 years later.
That's so true. And you toured Australia not that long ago as well. Are you expecting to come down under again when I guess you're allowed to?
As soon as we can.
Yeah.
Australia is absolutely one of our favorite countries. And if I was to choose another place to live, it would definitely be out of Scandinavia. It would definitely be Australia.
Wow.
We are so, and this is not me sucking up. it's just something with Australians and Scandinavians. We get along so well. We have the same sense of humor, the same irony, and we get along so easily. We understand each other.
Yeah.
And on top of that, your country is just amazing. Your nature is amazing.
There's also a certain vibe about all those great-looking, hot surfer chicks.
Well, we 100% agree. We obviously think it's a pretty good place.
I have to see men, though. I do believe still to this day that you have, like, a fabric that are shooting male stars out in the middle of nowhere in Australia. It's so many amazing men coming from Australia. It's just crazy.
The Hemsworth effect, we call it.
That's yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
So obviously, you know, before COVID and that, you guys were doing a bit of touring here and there. Can we expect any new music from Aqua anytime soon?
It could be. We won't deny it. It's been a very quiet year for all bands all around the world. No touring, no concerts, nothing. So we had a lot of time to think about things and to play around and have some fun and never say never. Yeah.
Beautiful.
And that's a lot for us to say. So, you know, take it the positive direction.
Beautiful. Oh, I'm looking forward to new music from Aqua. I think that would be amazing. So please do it.
Just quickly, before Thank we let you. You guys go, I do have to ask the question. I don't know how much you can say because it did go to court, but when Barbie Girl was a hit, you guys were taken to court by Mattel, who I guess alleged that there was some brand damage done on their behalf. I'd like to know what you guys think, because I don't think Barbie Girl did any brand damage at all. I think Barbie Girl just sold a hell of a lot of Barbies.
That's so true. And we can speak about all the dirty details.
Oh, good.
We were sued, and, you know, we were looking back on it, you know, now it's obvious that Mattel sued us to, you know, to be on the same wave as the Barbie Girl song. And they sold a hell of a lot of Barbie dolls. So it was obvious. But it was very stressful for us. It was a lot of, you know, all we were talking about for a while was that lawsuit, you know.
Okay. Well, I think we need to go out. Just one more thing, actually. I forgot. I've got this. We grabbed this from Classic FM in the UK, the operatic version of Barbie Girl. Have you guys heard this before? Renee singing along beautifully there. I don't know, guys. I got to say.
I never heard that before.
That's hilarious.
I prefer the original.
Yes, I keep it to the original.
Thank you.
You guys have been so generous joining us so late where you are, so early where we are. But Aqua, we just love you guys so much. We can't wait to see you back down under.
Yeah.
Maybe permanently one day. Who knows? But Aqua, big love from Australia and thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming out.
Ooh, I'm actually really nervous because I have been keeping a secret from everyone for about 10 months, which I have said is very unlike me. I'm very much an open book. But this secret is very personal. So I'm already getting teary. I'm very, I'm nervous to share it, but I think it's something that needs to be talked about more. And I actually regret keeping this secret. So I'm going to explain. If you're a long-standing listener to this show, you may have followed my journey a fair few months ago when I was talking about my fertility. And I was talking about how I was getting older and the wedding was pushed back because of COVID. And I wanted to check if I was, you know, losing the battle with the biological clock. And at that same time, my partner, Nev, and I actually decided to start trying for a baby. So it's been about 10 months now that we've been on this journey, and I really did not realize when we had the conversation 10 months ago that it would be such an emotional journey, because when we discussed it, we're really excited about it. We're really excited about just the idea of becoming a little family, and that was the main emotion. And we didn't want to tell anyone because we didn't want that added pressure. We thought it'd be pretty chill. We'd just, you know, give it a go and see what happened. And I was also really excited about the idea of surprising everyone with that news if it were to happen. So there are a few reasons we kept it a secret, but now that it's been a while and it hasn't happened, I really wish I hadn't kept it to myself, because I've actually needed that support network and I haven't had it there because I didn't tell anyone that's what we're doing. And then it got to a point where it was kind of too far gone to be like, oh, this has, you know, been happening. And we just kind of kept it to ourselves. But it's really hard. Like, you grow up thinking that this is what our bodies are made for.
And it'll be like, you know, that I know so many people who have struggled with fertility, and I know so many people who go a couple of years, 10 years, 20 years trying for a baby and it doesn't happen. But when you first have that conversation, you just have that faith that it'll be easy and that, you know, it'll just happen because you want it to happen. And every month when you get your period and it hasn't happened, it's just a kick in the guts, and the excitement starts to wane and the sadness grows, and then you're thinking, what if? And you're thinking, will this ever happen? And it just, the longer it goes on, the harder and sadder it does get. And it has been about 10 months, and they say that, you know, a lot of couples take up to a year to fall pregnant naturally, and then that's when you go and you seek help or intervention from the doctor. So we're not at that point yet, but it's been a really difficult kind of 10 months. And I've started getting angry at my body. I started, this might be a bit TMI, but I started resenting the act of falling pregnant, if you get what I mean.
Oh, wow.
Because,
okay.
You know,
it wasn't
doing the job it's meant to be doing.
To do.
And so I was kind of like mad at that.
Oh,
and and so then it starts to affect your relationship in a little way from that intimacy perspective. But Nev and I are doing great. Like we're really doing well. We know that, you know, we haven't even dove into that science world where intervention in the future might be necessary. We know we've got time, but I wanted to talk about it. One, because I want to tell all my friends and family, so I do have that support that I need. Because
and that
it's
breaks
been very
my
emotional.
Heart that hasn't been there for you.
I know, and it's my own fault, and that was a choice that I do regret making. I really do. But I also wanted to talk about it because there are so many women and men out there who not only struggle to fall pregnant, but it takes a little bit longer than you expect. And I don't think until you're in it, you understand how hard it is. Like even if it's only 2, 3, 4 months, it's still like it can still be really depressing or emotional just going through those stages. So I just wanted to talk about it, and I want it to not be a taboo subject to talk about. And I want people to know that to have that support network is so important. And that's what I'm doing now as well.
Good on you,
so
Gabby.
Snotty.
I know that was really hard for you to do.
Really hard.
That would have been really hard for a lot of people to listen to.
Yeah.
We are all here for you. And I thank you for being so honest and open there, because that's you telling your story, but that is you telling the story of thousands of Queenslanders.
Totally.
Everyone knows someone who has struggled. So like I say, while that's your story, that could just be so many people's stories. So I think that's really, really big of you to be so open and honest about that.
Yep.
And yeah, just to own that, like you have in a public forum, like good on you. And yeah, we love you. We love you. And
I need you guys.
We're here for you.
I need the support. So thank you.
No, thank you for doing that. And if this story, if Gabby opening up on this has raised any issues for you, you can contact Lifeline at any time if you need to talk to someone.
Of course.
On 13 11 14. We're never gonna get one on. Never gonna get one on.
The anniversary today of when Princess Diana passed away, we really did want to reach out and see if we could find someone who met her, because we have seen so much about her, we've heard so much about her, but someone who's met her is just next level. And Edith Conn joins us right now. How are you, Edith?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Edith, you met Princess Diana. She was known around the world as the people's princess because she was just so normal and approachable and just relatable. Is that the Princess Diana you met?
That is exactly the Princess Diana that I met. She was charming. She was graceful. She was funny. She was approachable. She was everything positive that you would expect, whilst also being very royal. And to have that kind of humility in that position, I would say, is quite unique.
So where did you actually meet Princess Diana?
She came to Manchester in 1991. She came to the art gallery, and with a royal visit, I don't know if you're aware how these royal visits go, but normally speaking, you are put into a group of people, and if you're lucky enough, the princess comes to your group and chats just to the group. But we were very fortunate. My husband and I were just by ourselves. Wow. And she was brought over to us, and she was introduced to us, and she was introduced to me because of my work with the Red Cross. And of course, she was extremely interested in the work of the Red Cross, being involved herself. So we chatted for quite some time about the Red Cross and what it meant to her and what it actually meant to me too.
Wow.
That is so amazing. Other than the Red Cross, did you speak to her about anything else that gave you, I guess, some insights into, you know, her personality and the person she was?
Yes, I can absolutely tell you. We were a couple of months before we met her, we went to a concert in the UK for a Tina Turner concert. Hmm. And she was also at that Tina Turner concert, strangely enough. Yeah. And so when we talked about the Red Cross and business and things like that, I said to her, Mum, we saw you at the Tina Turner concert. And she said, oh, I know. Wasn't it marvellous? So we chatted about the qualities of Tina Turner for some time. And we were having quite a long chat, and it was quite a personal chat, which is very unusual, really. So I was more than delighted to be able to talk to her. I mean, I hate to use the word impressive, but she's very statuesque. You know, she was quite tall. And I'm not terribly tall, but she was almost taller than my husband. Wow. She was a very beautiful woman. And the whole thing, I think you can gather from the way I'm speaking about it, the whole thing was something quite remarkable.
It really sounds like it. And I guess because you had this personal connection with her, you actually met her and had this conversation, did it hit you a lot harder than most when she did pass away?
Yeah, it was dreadful. I mean, it's been dreadful for millions of people, but yes, it was. I think if you have met somebody, you do have a bit of an insight into them. You know, I only met her once, and because our chat was so informal, a funny thing did happen though, because after we'd finished talking about charity work and Tina Turner and all that sort of thing, I said to her, because very often when the royals are on tour, they go from one event to another event, or, you know, another group of people or another function. And I said to her, are you going on now to do another? And she said, with such a cheeky smile, no, she said, I'm not. I'm going home, and I'm going to put my feet up. I'm going to have beans on toast, and I'm going to watch EastEnders. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with EastEnders.
It's kind of like Neighbours, but
it's exactly like your Neighbours. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was so humanistic.
I'm
such
picturing her in her tracksuit pants, just socks on around the house, having her beans on toast, watching her trashy soap.
It's difficult to picture that, isn't it? When
it is.
She used to sing her beautiful gowns and tiaras, and then to actually think about her going home and putting her feet up and having beans on toast. But that was the quality of the person, though, you see.
Edith, do you watch The Crown, and do you think the portrayal of Diana
I do watch The Crown, and I've got to say I'm not terribly happy with it, because I know they have to make it into Hollywood, as it were. But no, I don't think it's a true portrayal at all. I don't think it's a true portrayal of a few of the royals in it, as it so happens. But, you know, I suppose it's the drama that sells the series, doesn't it? So
I think the producers have even admitted to that at times, like
dramatizing things.
Yeah, this is what we think happened. But, yeah. Interesting. Well, It's 24 years to the day that Princess Diana passed away, 31st of August, 1997. It certainly was a day that changed the world. It's one of those times where everyone knew where they were, what they were doing, if you were old enough to remember that. Mm. And Edith Conn, lucky enough to actually meet Princess Diana. Thanks for being part of Cliffo and Gabby's Never Gonna Get One. Really great chat, Edith.
Oh, that's a pleasure. Thank you for talking to me. The Hit Breakfast Show.